Good morning. Last week we began discussing what actually happens when you get a hazmana and when you actually come to a din Torah. So we began with the first issue. When you send a hazmana, we discussed the question of how much information has to be included in a hazmana. So the halacha, you do not have to disclose what your arguments are. You have to obviously tell the person you have to be to send a hazmana. We'll discuss in a moment if you have to discuss the amount of the claim. But to explain the basis for your claim or to give supporting documentation, you do not have to do. And adrabah, in halacha, lahavdil in courts, there's a concept of discovery. Everything, all the documents have to be given over before the actual court case and to give everyone time to prepare. And halacha fakert, the halacha brings down that if you give someone the documentation beforehand, you're giving him more time to review it, more time to concoct a story or to figure out how to be mashakar in a way that you will get away with it. And therefore, adarabah, you do not have to disclose the arguments until you're actually there in Beis Din. As we explained, the reason for this difference is that lahavdil in court, the responsibility of making the legal arguments is on the lawyers. Because they have to do their legal research and come with the reasons why they believe they're correct, that is something that needs preparation and they need the documentation to prepare in advance. In Beis Din, lahavdil, it is a very different system. The responsibility to figure out what the halacha does not lie on the parties. It lies on the dayanim, on the Beis Din. All the parties need to do is simply show up and say the story, say what happened, and say what they're asking for. And as a result of that, that does not need much preparation. You just have to remember what actually happened, and that's why we do not do much discovery in advance. Now, although you don't have to explain what your tviya was, you don't have to explain why you think you're right, the shach brings down a machlokes, but the shach paskins, you do have to disclose the amount of the claim. You have to say, I'm asking for the person $1,000, $10,000, $1 million, You have to put down how much you are actually being the tefiyah is for. And the reason for that, the Shach explains, is because the nitzvah can say, I don't want to show up to Beis Din. Perhaps if it's a minimal claim, I'll just settle out of court. Therefore, before I respond to the hazmana, I have the right to know how big the claim is, and then I'll make a decision. Is it worth my while going to Beis Din, or should I just settle? Now, others argue. They say if you want to settle, you can do that in Beis Din. There's no reason for it to be in the hazmana in advance. The Gros Moshe has an interesting hachra. Me'ikar ha'din, he passes like the shach, that when you send a hazmana, you have to disclose what the amount of the claim is for. You have to say you're asking for $10,000, whatever the number is. However, zok the shach, if a Beis Din sends a hazmana and does not include the amount, the nitva still has to respond. And he explains that if you have a reputable Beis Din, they would not send a hazmana for a minimal amount. They obviously saw the claim and made the judgment call that this is an amount that is not going to be just be settled out of court to avoid a din Torah. And therefore, if you get a hazmana, even without the amount, you still do have to respond. Now, in Lamaisa, this is a type of fight which is Tayinim like getting jumped, yelling, fighting about what it should say in the hazmana, what it shouldn't say in the hazmana. It's a rather pointless fight. If it's a meaningful amount, it is very rare for the nitzvah just to say, okay, here, just take the money, I'm not going to a din Torah. So, but they didn't generally include the amount simply to avoid a fight. It's very hard to figure out what there will be a settlement on, what there won't be a settlement on, and therefore, b'derech klal, just included, the information is included when you first send the hazmana. Now, another common question that comes up is a person is involved with a dispute. He's ready to go to Beis Din, but he says, I don't trust the other party. He's a crook, he's a gangster, and I'm going to go to a din Torah, I'm going to win, and then he's not going to pay. So I'm willing to go to a din Torah, but I want him to escrow money beforehand. Put it in escrow by the Beis Din. And this way, I'm secure. I know if I win the din Torah, I'll have where to collect from. The Beis Din will simply release the funds. Now, Mikra Hadin, there is no such right for a party to demand that. It's discussed in Shach and Simen 9 Hey. There is no such right. You go to a din Torah. After the din Torah, you get a psak, and the Beis Din will enforce it. Nevertheless, the Achroinim say today, where the Beis Din has very limited powers, It is very difficult for a Bezin to enforce their psak. So there are achroinim that say that in a case where they see that there is regalayim ledover, the fellow is a bit of a gangster, he's a shady character, and it will be difficult to collect, the Beis Din may insist on putting funds in escrow before the Din Torah. Now, although there is a makar in halacha to do this, in practice this virtually never happens, for this simple reason, as we've discussed in previous shiurim, there's no way to force anyone to come to a particular Beis Din. The Nitzaveh and Nitzvah have to agree, negotiations, they have to agree which Beis Din to submit to. Because of that, if any particular Beis Din says, yes, I agree with you, this other fellow does look like a gangster, and we are not going to take the case until he escrows money, so the fellow simply won't come to this Beis Din. He'll say, no, I want to go to a different Beis Din, I want to go to a Zablah, and therefore in practice I've never actually seen this happen, where money is escrowed in advance. But it is a theoretical right, but it doesn't happen l'maisa. Now that we know what a hazmana has to say, again, minimal information, basically just the amount of the claim, let's discuss a little bit about when you can send hazmanas and a little bit more about the actual process. Al pi din, when you send a hazmana, the nitzvah has to respond to the first hazmana. If a person receives a summon to a Din Torah and says, no, I have no intention of going to a Din Torah, the halacha is a Beis Din has the right to put out a siruv, declare that he's a messiah of the Din, and put him in cherem immediately. Now, in practice, Beis Din will send three hazmanas. They are generally spaced a week apart. Again, this is a minhag. It's brought down in the Pesach Tshuva. The minhag is not to put out a siruv until he ignores three. Now, if he calls the Beis Din after one and says, you're wasting your time, I'm not coming, then they'll put a siruv after one. But if he just ignores it, no response, silence, then they will send three hazmanos. They'll typically be spaced a week apart. And only after he ignores all three will they put out a siruv, or at least threaten to put out a siruv. Now, very often, a person will get a hazmana, and as we discussed, he has the right to respond, I'm ready to go to a Din Torah, but not to you. I want to go to another Beis Din, I want to go to a Zablah, I want to explore my options. A person certainly has the right to do that, and a Beis Din will respect that. The problems begin when a person says, I'm willing to go to a Din Torah, it'll take me about a month or two to figure out which Beis Din I'll go to. So at that point, the Beis Din HaMazmin, it depends on the Beis Din, they have the right to say that it's true. You don't have to come to us, you can come to a different Beis Din. But we need a clear response. You need to commit that you're willing to go to this particular Beis Din. They may even insist that he sign Eshtai Brurin, a sign an arbitration agreement, but just this open-ended excuse, I'll go, I'm not sure where, I'm not sure when, that will very often not be considered a legitimate response. Now, how much leeway to give, if he says, I need 2 weeks, I need 3 weeks, I'm trying to find a tie-in, that is something which is at the discretion of the Beis Din HaMazmin. But, and it's something which it becomes an issue, people do fight about it, but al-halacha, the response has to be right away. Again, he can respond, I want to go elsewhere, but you have to name the Beis Din, you have to be willing to submit to that Beis Din. Now, it's important to know that when you send a hazmano, and the person responds, I'm ready to go to the Din Torah, I'm ready to go to this particular Beis Din. The Beis Din HaMazmin will say, fine, so go there. There is nothing stopping the Nitzvah from changing his mind. The very fact that he made a statement, even in writing, I'm willing to go to this Beis Din, I'm willing to go to a Zablah, this is my Boirer. Until he actually signs an arbitration agreement by that second Beis Din, he is not bound. He can change his mind. And this does happen on occasion, where the person will first say, I'm willing to go to this Beis Din, then he'll change his mind and say, I want to go to a second Beis Din or a third Beis Din. Again, at some point, if you see that it's dragging out, there are games being played, you go back to the Beis Din that sent the original Hazmana, ask them to continue the process, send another Hazmana, send a Hasra Siruv. But you always have to go back to the Beis Din HaMazmin until any of the parties actually sign a Shtar Brurim by another Beis Din. They can switch around, they can change their mind, and it's not locked in until there's actually a signed agreement. Now, there are a number of halachos as far as when you can send a hazmana for and when you can have a Din Torah. The first halacha is you cannot have a Din Torah on Shabbos or Yontif. this is not midaraisa, this is a gzera shemarichdoiv, because when you have it in Torah, the dayanim write down the reasons, they write down the psak din, and therefore, as a gzera, you cannot have Eidin Torah. Interestingly enough, you cannot have Eidin Torah either on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yontif. Why? So the reason is because people are, the dayanim and the balei din are Torah in Mishum Kvayt Shabbos. People have a lot to do before Shabbos. They have to get ready for Shabbos, Kavod Shabbos. And therefore, we're afraid because of Kavod Shabbos, they're going to be under pressure. They're going to be in a rush. If a dayan is in a rush, you're going to have a problem. Mishnah tells us, having Mesunim B'din, to Paskin, you need Yishuv Hadas. You need to be, cannot be rushed or hurried. And therefore, in Erev Shabbos, where the assumption is people are under time pressure, they have to get ready for Shabbos, therefore you cannot have a Din Torah. Not only, it's besides the fact that Dayanim are not allowed to sit, you're not allowed to send a Hazmana either. If you send someone a Hazmana on Erev Shabbos, he can totally ignore it. And more than that, even if you send him a Hazmana on Erev Shabbos, that he should come to Beis Din on Tuesday, if he doesn't come, he has a good excuse. He can say, I got the mail on Erev Shabbos. I was all busy getting ready for Shabbos, and I totally forgot about it. And therefore, anything, if he receives it on Erev Shabbos, he has the right to ignore it. So a Beis Din that mails out Hazmanos, if they mail it out on Thursday, or depending where they are, on Wednesday, if it's going to get there on Erev Shabbos, the Hazmano can be completely ignored by the Nitzvah, even if you can establish that he got it, you track the package, it was signature required, but he can say, I got an Erev Shabbos, I got busy with Shabbos, I forgot about it. What? With the Hazmana? No. Salacha is that when you send a Hazmana through a Shliach, even if you give it over to a neighbor or to a lady, the halacha is you can rely on the chazaka that they got it in order to put them in cheirim. If you want to write a shtar in cheirim which will cost them money to fight, they already, you can't rely on a chazaka if it will cost them money. But if it's simply a question of making the determination that they're a masar of a din or giving a heter akois, you can rely on the chazaka that they got it. No, it can't be received on Friday. They can bez and contend it whenever they want. Probably. I mean, it's not discussed in Shulchan Aruch, but it's probably not any less reliable than dropping it off by a neighbor. Now, this halacha that you cannot have a din Torah on Friday, there's an interesting, the Tumim has a chiddush. He says that today, when you sign a shtar brurah, and very often you're makabel the bez din, bein le din, bein le tois. Even if they make a mistake, you're still accepting the verdict, you're still accepting the psak din. Zakatumim. What's the problem with the din Torah on Friday? Problem is they're in a rush, having misunim din, they'll make a mistake. Zakatumim, if you're makabel bein le din, bein le tois, this problem does not apply, and you can have the din Torah even on Erev Shabbos. What? They what? Oh, Zogdei Avnei Choshen, he says Chas V'Shalom. He says it's true if they make a mistake. You're makabel bein l'din bein l'tois. You don't have the right to overturn it. However, Zogdei Avnei Choshen, for the dayanim to go put themselves in a situation where Chazal say you're going to make a mistake, he says Chas V'Shalom. He says having misunim b'din. What would be if you write on the shtar brurah bein l'din bein l'tois? Does that mean now dayanim do not have to misunim b'din? He says, Chas V'Shalom, Avada, they have to do whatever they could do to get it right. If Afal Pikin make a mistake, they're covered. But Zogdei Avnei Choshen, for them to do it on Erev Shabbos in such a case would be Aser. He says even further, even if the parties specifically say, you know what, we're in a rush. We have a day job. Friday is the only day we can come. So let's have this Din Torah on Friday. And we understand that you might make a mistake, Afal Pikin. Zogdei Avnei Choshen, Chas V'Shalom. How could a dayan do something knowing that he might be makabel the din? And therefore, even though they're makabel, technically speaking, it's binding, it's davar shebamalim, you can be meichel, but for a dayan to do something who'll be makabel the din, where he has another way out, he said it'll be usur. He said, even though there's no tefias moment on them, but it would still be usur and should not be done. Tumim seems to argue. Tumim seems to hold that if the parties decide it's more convenient for them, and they're willing to have a hefsin moment, they're willing to be meichel, so it may not be wise, they may likely end up with a wrong psak. But it is a davar shel mamon. If the par is a mekabel it, they're ready to accept it. It's more important to them to get it over with quickly than it is to get it right. They have the right to do that, and the Tumim holds that it will be mutter. Now, another halacha brought down, the Ran speaks out that what would be if the, what, you know, the, what is the issur on the dayan to deal with the case on Erev Shabbos? He's under pressure, covered Shabbos, he has a lot to do, and he will not be have the Yishuv Hadas, he will not be able to be Mesunim Ladin, he'll get the Psak wrong. What happens if this particular dayan doesn't help out that much at home? He has his wife, his family, he has cleaning help. He's not busy at home. Every Shabbos is like every other day. He comes home, he takes a shower, and that's it. He's not the one doing sponja. Dr. Ron, in such a case, the yeser would not apply. It's only because having Mesunim Adin. But in a situation where they do not have anything to do with Kavod Shabbos, they could die. Now, to send a hazmona, you can't do, because the parties can say, the Bali Dinim can say, we're busy for Shabbos. But in a case where the Dayanim do not have what to do for Shabbos, there this Isser does not apply, and if the Bali Dinim would like to come, then you'd be able to do it. Now, another point that the Rishonim and Achronim speak out is that this Isser is only when you're having the entire case in Erev Shabbos. Because of the concept of having Sunim B'din, you cannot schedule a case for a period where there is some sort of time pressure. However, if you're going to just have the first session, you'll just hear the claims, you'll hear the arguments, you'll hear the witnesses, they'll present the evidence, but you're not going to issue a verdict on the spot, this doesn't apply. Because having Mesun Medin is going on the Psak of Atari, the back and forth to arrive at the final Psak. Since that's going to be done after Shabbos, you will not be under any pressure, and this will be mutter. Now, the Tumim brings a raya to the inverted case as well. What happens if you have the first session on a Thursday, and you have the follow-up where they issue a psak on Erev Shabbos? Tumim says that is mutter, because he brings a raya from Dini Nefashos. Dini Nefashos, they would don on Thursday, the psak would be on Friday, and there's no problem of having the Sunnah B'din. Since they already had a day beforehand to think about the case, to arrive at their conclusion, they have the Yishuv Hadas, and there they would be able to paskin. Now, in practice, it is very rare for a Bezdin to have the first session and the Psak at the same time, and therefore this halacha is not really so relevant. It's relevant more in the fact that you can't send hazmaras, you can't insist that someone comes in Erev Shabbos. But since generally, if they're paskining on Friday, it means they started beforehand, or if they're starting on Friday, they're not going to paskin until the next week, you generally do not have this problem. Now, besides for Erev Shabbos, there's another interesting halacha that we do not send hazmonos for Nisan or Tishrei. Now, here there is a machlokes why. The one reason why is because of the mayados. People are busy for Yontiv, Tishrei, you have Rosh Hashanah, you have Yom Kippur, you have Sukkot, a lot of work to be done, and a lot of days of Yontiv. People are distracted. They do not have time. You cannot send a hazmona. Nisan as well, getting ready for Pesach, is very time-consuming, and you cannot send hazmona for Nisan and Tishrei. Now, Maker Hadin, this is really, really only refers to someone who has to travel to arrive at the Din Torah. Someone who is from another city, the Din Torah is taking place here, you cannot send the hazmona, you cannot tell him to come in the beginning of Nisan because he just doesn't have the time for it. However, the Rajba and I think the Hanhaga L'maisa is, even if the person is in the city, still we do not send a hazmona for the beginning of Nisan, beginning of Tishrei. Now that's the beginning of Nisan, the beginning of Tishrei. What about the end of Nisan? What about after Yontif? So L'chayra, Yontif is over. You should be able to send the hazmona. So over here, there are some interesting reasons why. The Prisha says even after Yontif, you cannot have a Din Torah. You cannot force someone to come. Why? Yontif's over. What are you busy with? So the Prisha says, what are you busy with? Yontif is expensive. You went to the store. You bought on credit. You have to pay off your debts. Since you have these chayvis, you're busy working off paying down your grocery bills from Yontif. Therefore, the whole Nisan and the whole Tishrei are off limits. The Shvus Yaakov has a slightly different shot. He says that you're busy putting away all your kalim. Comes Pesach, you bring out all your pots and pans and you do all your Pesach dishes, you're busy putting them away. I guess, sukkahs. You're busy putting away your sukkah. So because of that, you're torrid, and you therefore can have an excuse not to come to a din Torah the entire Nisan and the entire Tishrei. Now, that's one pshat. The reason is for the Yom Tovah. Rashi says a different pshat. He says Nisan and Tishrei were the Zman where they were busy with the harvest and with the planting and with the harvest. And therefore, because they were tarred b'malachtoi, they're able to say, I cannot come to a din Torah. This is a busy season. I don't have time to take off from work to show up at a din Torah. So based on Rashi, hu hadin, if you send an accountant a hazmana in April, Mistama, April has the same, for an accountant, has the same din as Nisan or Tishrei for anybody else. That's his busy season. That is when he is tarred b'malachtoi. And if, because he started with Malakta, he has a legitimate excuse. He can say, I am not able to take off from work, and therefore he does not have to show up at the Din Torah. Now, in these cases, this is not as chomer as Erev Shabbos. Erev Shabbos, not only can you not schedule a case, if you send a hazmana, the fellow can ignore it. He can say, I was so busy, I forgot about it afterwards. On Nisan and Tishrei, although we do not schedule cases for it, if you get a hazmana on Nisan or Tishrei, you would have to respond, and you would have to at least show up to a din Torah afterwards. And the Chachamim speak out in other cases about if you send a hazmana to a Baal Bris, so he does not have to show up to it. You cannot schedule a din Torah from the time the child is born until the day after the Bris. By a chasana, there is a machlokes. Some place can give him 3 weeks, a week before the chasana, the Sheva Brachos, and a week afterwards. I guess that's to recover. Other place can make it a little bit of a shorter time frame, a week or 3 days before, and just the Sheva Brachos, different machleksim. But the bottom line is, whenever there is a legitimate excuse, he can say, I don't have time for this, I'm busy, and therefore you cannot schedule a hazmana for such a time period. Now, this does happen actually pretty regularly. If you send a hazmana to someone who owns a store before Yontif time, and everyone knows this is a very busy season, he has the right to say, I'm busy, I don't have time, I'm ready to come to a din Torah, but you have to wait until after this season. I can't afford to take off time, and that is a legitimate excuse. Now, another halakha is we do not have a din Torah at night. Laila is not a Zman Bezdin. The Smaya is a Chiddush. He says if there are lights in the Bezdin, if there are Neiros, he says it's Mutter. Most places can argue, so you cannot force someone to at least start a din Torah at night. So if you started during the day, you could pass in during the night. But in theory, you cannot send the hazmana and schedule it lechanchila at night. This is something which is certainly waivable. The parties very often, night is most convenient time, therefore they will agree to it. They will waive this right. But if they don't, if one of them does not want to come at night, he's busy, he's tired, he says, I want bedafka during the day, he has the right to make that, to insist, because al pi halacha, laila is not isman for a yeshiva's bezdin. Now, one last, more modern day issue, and that is, at least in New York State, we do not have dinei Torah on Sundays. That is because of a recent court decision where a psak din was overturned because someone dug up some law from the 1800s that a court, and apparently that includes an arbitration panel as well, cannot have sessions on Sunday. And therefore, if a Bezdin in New York State has any sessions on a Sunday, the award will not be enforceable. Now, this judge, besides the fact that he threw out this case, and it really jeopardized many of the Piskei Din, because Sunday is usually the most convenient day for a Din Torah. The party is no one's working, and therefore it was always the preferred day. So now that we have this, at least the Batei Din in New York generally do not operate on Sunday because they do not want to put people in a position where the awards cannot be confirmed. It also added to the backlog. Anyone involved in the Din Torah knows how difficult it can be to schedule if you're dealing with the Dayanim that are popular. The work week just got cut short. Friday is out, al pi halacha, and obviously Shabbos you can't. And now you can't do dinei Torah on Sunday either. You're down to a 4-day work week, which makes it even more difficult to actually get the sessions scheduled in a timely fashion. But there's not much that can be done about it. In New Jersey, this has not been challenged, and many Batei Din generally are still operating on Sundays. There are some Tayinim or people that are afraid to schedule on Sunday, because who knows what'll, if it happened in New York, it can happen in New Jersey. But in general, the Batei Din do operate in New Jersey at this point. So now that we finished with the halachos of Hazmana, what happens when you actually show up in a Beis Din? What actually happens? What does the interior look like? So the first question that you get asked when you arrive at a Beis Din is, when you sign a Shtar Brurin, you sign an arbitration agreement. Now, it's there, first of all, to make the award enforceable in court, so that if the fellow does not listen to the Beis Din, you can have the award confirmed, you can have it enforced by the court system. That's the arbitration agreement. The Shtar Brurin is there to waive and to set certain halakhic parameters for the Din Torah. The first question you get asked is, do you want Pesha or do you want Din? Or more specifically, do you want a Pshara? Do you want Pesha Karev L'Din? Or do you want Din? Now what that means is, Din means how the Beis Din will paskin based on Din. They'll open up a Shulchan Aruch, they'll follow the Gidrei Halacha. In general, many, or I would say most Batei Din, do not offer straight Din. They don't give you that option. They tell you can either do Pesha or Pesha Karev L'Din. Pshara is, we'll call it a compromise, a settlement. Pesher Karev L'Din means there'll be a Pshara, but it has to be Karev L'Din. It has to be close to the Din. The Beis Din can't just do whatever they want. They have more boundaries. We'll define that in a moment. But, and many Batei Din will not offer the option of strict Din. And the reason for that, it's based on a halacha, it's based on Yerushalmi, but the Mechaber in the end of Siman Yudbeis writes, Tzrichim ha-dayonim lehisrachik b'chol ha-yicholis, shleikabu aleihem lo doin din Torah. Dayanim should do whatever they can not to accept upon themselves to judge strict din. Yushami says that today, that to be yored l'sayif, the imkei shahalacha is extremely difficult, especially in dinei mamadis where you have to medame milsa l'milsa, both in the halacha, both and in metzius, and it's very difficult. And therefore, the Yushami says that there's no one around that can say, I know how to paskin a din Torah, and therefore, the Dayanim should avoid it. As a result of that, when you go to a Beis Din, they generally will not give you the option of Din. They will say you can accept either Pesher or Pesher Karev L'Din. Now, what is a Pshara? So here we have, Pshara is a very misunderstood concept. People walk around with an impression that when you go to a Beis Din doesn't do Din, they just do Psharas. Which means I walk into Beis Din, I say, Yankel says that I owe him $1 million, I say I don't owe him a penny, so Beis Din will pull a Shlema HaMelech, they'll split the baby, I have to pay him $500,000. And people say, what do I need this for? I want Din, I don't owe him a dime, I don't want to have to pay him anything, I don't want to put myself in a situation where they'll make Psharas, they'll make settlements when there's really nothing, there's no obligation. So this concept, or this perception is a mistake. And I'd like to start with the Gemara, go through some of the what Pshara means in the Rishonim and the Achrayim, and then we'll get back to how it plays out L'maisa. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Pshara is preferred over Din. It's Emes v'Shalom v'Hevay, where we already have Emes and Shalom together, or Mishpat and Din. There's another pasuk, Mishpat and Tzedek. Usually, Yesh Mishpat and Tzedek, and Yesh Tzedek and Mishpat. Where do you have a combination of the two? Where you can have Shalom and Emes? Where can you have Mishpat and Tzedek together? The Gemara says that is Pshara. Dehainu, when you have Din, Din means there's going to be a winner and there's going to be a loser. You're going to be right or you're going to be wrong. So that's Din, that's Mishpat. However, the result of Mishpat is very often, you had a machlokes beforehand, each party said they're right, and afterwards, the loser is still upset, he's still angry at the person, and he realizes he's wrong up he din, but it doesn't necessarily heal the relationship. Pshara, the Gemara says, is emes v'ashalom or tzedek u'mishpat. If the parties get together, and instead of going till the end, going through the entire battle and getting a psak, winner takes all, if the parties come to a settlement, whoever's right agrees to be mevater a little bit, give in a little bit, he recognizes the other person has a point, he sees how he's suffering, and he offers some sort of settlement and they make a pshara, there you have mishpat and shalom, and that is preferred to strict din. Now, based on that, so that's the Gemara explains the reason for pshara is l'man hashala, in order to make the parties get along, so that afterwards the fight ends, they realize that they work together, and it's for the relationship. Now, based on that, I actually had a chaver who had a din Torah with a moysid, and he went to the din Torah. He came into the bezdin, all guns blazing. He basically came in saying that the moysid is lying through their teeth, and they're doing their rishon, and they did this wrong, and they did that wrong. Anything that the moysid said, he challenged them. He didn't believe it. He was foaming at the mouth. He was very upset. He was very hurt by what had happened, and he took a very aggressive stance in the bezdin. The psak came back, and this fellow lost on every single count, top to bottom. Every single argument he made, the Bezdin rejected. But then, to add insult to injury, the Bezdin wrote, normally when you have this kind of machlokes, there's a moysid involved, we're mafasher, we try to be mafasher l'man hashalom. However, in this particular case, we see the plaintiff is so irrational and so worked up and upset, even if we give him a couple of dollars, it's not going to make shalom. He's not ready to accept what happened, and therefore, they said the moysid is completely pater. Because if the point of making a pshara is l'man hashalom, when you will not accomplish that shalom, then there's no point in making the pshara. And the same token, as far as the amount of the pshara as well. If the person, if you see a minimal amount is sufficient to make shalom, then that's what you do. If it won't, you'll need a larger amount. You have the right to go a bit higher, but it's based on creating shalom. That is the first reason. That's really what the Medina de Gemara, that is the Maila of Pshara. Now, it's important to realize that in the Gemara, and when we talk about Pshara, there are two kinds of Pshara. The first kind is roughly mediation, where you negotiate a settlement between the parties. It's not imposed by the Bezdin. The Bezdin negotiates. They hear the claims, they talk to each party, and they get them to settle on something. That is a tremendous benefit for Shalom, because the parties each realize that the other party was working with them, didn't want to fight, they're open, they're ready to compromise, and that creates, that certainly helps the relationship. That's a negotiated pshara. There's another kind of pshara, which we'll get to in a moment, where the Bezdin can impose a pshara, where Bezdin can say, we think this is appropriate, and they can pick the number, it's arbitration, if you will. That can be done also in one of two ways. Sometimes it's done because when you sign the arbitration agreement, you give the Bezdin the jurisdiction, the authority to create a pshara. That's one way. Sometimes, even if the Bezdin is charged with passing in din, in halacha, there are certain cases they have the right to impose a pshara even against the will of the parties. We'll get to that in a moment. But there are basically three kinds of pshara. There's a pshara where it's a negotiated settlement where the parties agree to the actual settlement. There's a pshara where the parties are makabel pshara in the Bezdin. They give the Bezdin the right to decide what a reasonable pshara would be, and they're bound to that. And there's a third kind where the parties are coming for a din, but in specific situations, when the Bezdin is passing a din, they have the right to veer off from the din and impose a pshara. So let's deal with these three kinds one by one. The first kind is the negotiated settlement. Now that is certainly helps the man hashalom. Certainly helps the parties. They realize that they're working together. The way it typically plays itself out is parties come to a bezdin. They come for a din Torah. So what happens? Each party gets up to bezdin, gets up, and they explain why they believe they're right. Now before they came, sometimes they tried talking to each other. Sometimes they didn't bother. But outside of bezdin, very often, you hold one your way, the other guy holds the other way, they might yell and scream. No one's really listening to each other. When they come to bezdin, bezdin hears out the two sides. What they'll very often do is they'll turn to each side and explain to them what the other person's position is. They'll explain to them how, you know, you're coming in with certain assumptions. Your assumptions may not be correct. The other fellow is walking in with a different set of assumptions, and try to make sure that each party had better understanding of what the other person's position is. Once you accomplish that, once each party realizes the other guy is not crazy, he's not a ganav, he's not out to rip me off, He is just working on a different set of assumptions, or he's making certain hanachos, and that's why he feels he's right. Very often, it's easier to arrive at a middle ground. The Bezdin can tell some people that this claim is off the charts, drop it, it's not going anywhere. But in another issue, where it's an open question, where it's totally in halacha, it's totally in a judgment call. So once the litigants realize this is not some, you know, the person is not out to get me, there's just a legitimate disagreement and legitimate dispute, they are much more open to some sort of settlement. Now what also happens is that once the parties see that there is a rational argument to be made on either side, so now already they have to make a calculation. Are they as convinced as they were beforehand they're actually going to win? If they hear now the other person has a rational argument, they might disagree with it, but they don't know which way the dayanim will side. They're two now already, they're two tzadim. And therefore, very often they make a calculation that instead of rolling the dice, instead of waiting for a psak din, which it'll be a winner takes all, they'll either win or they'll lose, based on how nervous they get of you know, and how to the extent that they recognize that the other person has a reasonably good argument, they're willing to settle in order to cut the losses. They'd rather have a settlement that they can live with than running the risk of a psak din that they cannot. And therefore, very often, after you go through the back and forth, even if the parties came for din, once they have a better understanding of what's going on, it is very often possible to negotiate a pshara, to negotiate a settlement. The other big advantage of a pshara is that din is fairly rigid. You have a claim, it's dollars and cents. You'll either win the claim, you'll lose the claim. However, many situations don't lend themselves so much to a resolution of dollars and cents. You have a partnership where there's a fight. You may win X amount of dollars, you may lose X amount of dollars, but if you're open to a pshara, if you're open to try to work something out, you may be able to negotiate whether it's a buyout, whether it's splitting the responsibilities, or some sort of arrangement to set yourself up in the future to make it more workable. So while a din toira, a psak din, is generally just on the dollars and cents, if the issue is a relationship, you need to modify things, you need to work things out, very often you're better off working out a psara than going straight in and getting a psak. Now, when there is a negotiated settlement, it's important to realize that even when there's an agreement, the parties are not bound to that agreement. Until they make a kinyan, they write a shtar, the makabel kinyan, they can always say they changed their mind. Now, this, to a certain extent, is consistent with regular, with all halachas and choshimish, but you need a maisa kinyan. Dvarim are not binding. What's interesting is that even if they agree to be moichel, to waive certain rights, where you generally don't need a kinyan, by pshara you do. And the reason for that is that pshara is considered in halacha to be somewhat coerced. If two people decide, someone owes you money, you decide, you know what, I'm going to be mevater, you don't have to pay me back. Once you say those words, you're moichel, the debt is wiped out, you can't change your mind. But when Bezdin is putting pressure, they're going back and forth and twisting your arm a little bit, or explain to you how, you know, if you don't settle, you may end up losing everything. This is considered completely, you know, completely voluntary. And therefore, unless a kinyan is done, the parties can just change their mind and say, forget about it, I want in. And this happens very often. There are negotiations back and forth. One person will make an offer. The other person will go back and forth and you know, not sure. Then the other person will withdraw the offer. Then suddenly the person says, I want to take up the offer. Nothing doing. Until there's a final agreement and then a kinyan is done, the parties, according to Rav Pesach, can have the right to be chozer. They can back out of the pshara and say, forget it, let's do din. And the truth is, this is something the Beis Din has to be aware of. Parties sometimes resent when Beis Din applies pressure. Sometimes the parties walk away resenting it afterwards that they were forced into a pshara, if you will. It should be very clear to everyone, and the Beis Din should make it clear to the parties that it's their choice. When Beis Din is in this negotiations mode, it is their choice. The Beis Din will not force you to do anything. Now, another complication with pshara is that very often, if you're doing mediation, you want to get it at a settlement, it is much more effective if you speak to the parties privately. In general, to negotiate a settlement, you have to really understand what the real issues for each party is, what's important to them, what they're saying just as a negotiating stance, what's important and what, you know, and what isn't. And very often they will be reluctant to do that in front of the other party. So when the parties agree, and you cannot do this without their agreement, but if the parties agree that they feel there is room for a pshara, the bezim will very often ask for permission to speak to each party separately. And that way, when they speak to each party, they will not allow the parties to go make legal arguments or to go through the whole dintayra again. But at least they have a much better feeling, and they'll get a more honest understanding of what each party really wants. As you can have a situation where there's on the surface they're fighting about money, but one party really, if you give him a payment plan, he's willing to pay it. So this kind of thing, you can tease out much more effectively when you're speaking to the party separately. However, again, it can only be done if both parties agree. Otherwise, this is ex parte communication. Otherwise, it can passel the entire dintayra. But in the context of pshara, this is very often asked for, and it's typically granted. Now, I just want to end off with one interesting story. There is people very often want to know, when I go to Bezdin, what should I do? Should I ask for pshara, should I ask for din? And many people, their initial reaction is, I want din. Whatever I'm entitled to, I want. Whatever, if I'm not entitled to it, I don't want money that I'm not entitled to, I want din. Now, halacha clearly discourages that approach. And halacha clearly, pshara is preferred because we'd rather have parties go lefnim mishuras hadin, be mevatar on a few dollars, l'man hashalom. I will add just from personal experience that when the parties come in and one party says pshara, the other one, and one of the other parties says, no, I want bedafka din, so halacha is the person who wants din prevails because you cannot force pshara on someone. So if one person says, I want din, then that's it. It doesn't matter what the other person wants, he gets din. Personal experience is when you have these situations where one party is ready to make a pshara, the other one is not, more often than not, the party that insists on din ends up losing the case. And more often than not, he would have done better had he picked pshara. Now, I'm not sure exactly why. It's probably because the people who are so inflexible, they insist on din, are probably just wrong. The more flexible person is more willing to see his faults. He probably would have paid up if he was in the wrong, and perhaps that's why. But inevitably, the people who push the din end up suffering from that decision. There were two people that came to the Tzemach Tzedek. Now in those times they used to draft Jewish children to the army at a very young age. They were in the army for something like 20 years, and you can imagine, you come out of the Russian army 20 years later, you don't remember anything about Yiddishkeit. It was a terrible gzera. So whenever there was a draft, people would try to hide their children. They would try to avoid the draft at any cost. There were people that used to go around kidnapping Yiddish children in order to turn them over to the government in order to fulfill the quota for the army. Vayi hayoyim, two people come to the Tzemach Tzedek and said, listen, we are kidnappers. We went ahead, we chapped a few children, we turned them over to the army, and we were paid a certain amount of money. And we have a din Torah who had to split up this money between this partnership. But Rabbi, we don't want any pshara. You know, but we want din. Who's right? Who's entitled to this money? So the Tzemach Tzedek says, you want din? Opens up a chumash. That's the din. And it's brought down that neither of them survived the year.